This is James Throgmorton, and I want to speak about human reasoning, the way human beings think, how they reason things out, and the consequences of the way they reason things out. To begin, I want to turn back to the beginning, go back to Genesis, and look at what Adam and Eve did to begin with. Let's look in the third chapter. God had told Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden that they could eat of anything in the garden that they wanted to, except they were not to eat of the one tree. And the trees and the fruit here are no doubt symbolic. They implied that Adam and Eve took certain actions that was contrary to God's instructions. Eve didn't pluck an apple off a tree like everybody tries to imply that it was an apple. People try to imply that it was some sort of sex sin. No, they just decided that they had a better way than God's way. That's basically what they said. And the devil, let's translate it like it really should be and not say serpent. Let's just say, and the devil, Satan, said to the woman, you won't die. God had told him, if you break my laws, my rules, you're going to die. And the devil said, no, you're not going to die. He basically tells them that they're immortal. For God knows in the day you eat, your eyes will be opened and you will be like God, knowing good and evil. You know, we can look out at the world in which we live today, and this is probably a critical time to live for civilization of man, for the survival of the human race. And the human race will survive, not because of the human race, but because of God and because of the fact that God has a purpose and a plan. But man, at this point in time, decided they were going to make a Renaissance move. Now, you hear people talk about the Renaissance after the Dark Ages, an age of enlightenment. That's basically what the Renaissance was. And people today, intellectuals, look back at the Renaissance and say, well, this is when man finally figured out that they could control their own destiny, that they could begin to go forward and make improvements, and scientific progress started at this point in time. Well, that's an absolute fallacy. It's false, because the Dark Ages actually had caused man to lose knowledge that man had previously had. You know, knowledge that's in the Bible. I'll just use one simple example. The book of Job says plainly that God sits on the circle of the earth. And yet, in the Renaissance period, men like Copernicus and later Galileo figured out that the earth wasn't flat. Now, mankind had known that at one time. Job certainly knew it, because God told him firsthand. And man had lost that knowledge. But people look at, I think every generation that's ever lived thinks it's a Renaissance generation. They're human reasoning, their ability that they got from Adam and Eve to determine what was good and what was bad. Human reasoning. And we live in the society today where that's really the issue at hand. We can look out and see all sorts of things, and it's we live in a society that actually calls good evil and calls evil good. And yet, that fallacy of switching the roles of good and evil goes all the way back to this little episode with Adam and Eve, where God had told them, don't go that direction. Don't you try to decide for yourself what's good and bad. You listen to me. I'll tell you what's going to be good for you and what's going to hurt you. And if you'll listen to me, everything will be all right. But man didn't want to do that, and the devil certainly understood that God had created man with a vulnerability to their own ego, being vulnerable to their own minds, a trap built in. And so that's the origin in a nutshell. I tried to make it real simple, that man actually thinks that he's smart enough that he can figure out what is best for him. I want you to look back at recorded history, and the Chinese can go back about 6,000 years. Western civilization goes back 4,000 or 5,000 years with reasonable amount of information. The last 2,000 to 3,000 years, we've got a lot of historical information. Has mankind improved his plight? Has he really improved his plight? There's more human beings. We have a lot of technology. We have a lot of things that previous generations of people haven't had. But we're coming to the point where there is actually legitimate concern among all people that we could just wipe ourselves out, that we could destroy the human race. We look at, we just listen to the news any day, any night, and look at all the insurmountable problems on the face of this earth, and the root of all of it is man's reasoning, the way man thinks and the way man tries to control other men. You know, we live in a society where human beings like to look down on other human beings. Human beings want to control everybody. Everything is about power and money. And actually, power is more important than money, because power, if you have power, the money will follow. If you have power over other people. And we live in a society where, and I'm going to use this word, but I want to use it with a reservation of what I mean, a clarification of what I mean, the intellectual. Now, when I say the intellectual, I'm not talking about people that have better educations, or I'm not talking about the people necessarily in the colleges and the universities. I'm not speaking of it in the sense that the word intellectual is most often used. I'm speaking of it as the people that think they know it all. The people who in their own minds are great intellectuals. Adam and Eve had to figure this out. If they figured out that they had a better idea than God did, then they presumed themselves to be more intellectual than God. And we live in a society, and I sort of get a kick out of it. I installed a tankless water heater not long ago, and I was reading the instruction book. They told me everything except what I really needed to know. They told me all sorts of things not to do, things that were, you know, don't turn the gas on and light a match, you know, that kind of thing, all these little safety precautions, because people, and it's a matter of power, they presume that everybody else is less intelligent than they are. And that's human reasoning. I've got a little clipping here that I clipped out of Reader's Digest that I think exemplifies this better than anything else. Any of you that have ever tried to pick up, you have to assemble something, you pick up the instructions and try to follow the instructions, and it's so juvenile. They speak to you like you're a little child and spend half the book telling you things that any idiot would know not to do. And here I thought this was about the best example. And this is verbatim, word for word. The instructions that came with the cell phone were encouraging their customers to use their phone safe and sensible manner. One of these sensible tips, and this is the tip verbatim, if your device rings and you discover it is in the back seat, do not crawl over the seat to answer it while driving. Now, that's intellectual. That's modern. That's where we live. Because human beings think they've got it all figured out. In reality, they have nothing figured out. They have missed the whole point. Now, when it comes to religion and looking at the concept we might find in the Bible, or we might, those of us that are intellectually inferior to the world, those ones that might actually believe there is an all-powerful Creator God that designed, created, and sustains His creation, and has a long-range plan for that creation, and is going to bring it about. Those poor little childlike people like us that might believe that. You know, we have the atheist and we have the agnostic. Atheist who is so proud of his own intellect that he thinks he's the greatest thing in the universe is ignorant. He's ignorant of the facts. The agnostic that basically says, I'm ignorant, I don't know, and I'm proud of it. And we see that people like to create their concept of God in their own mind. Now, I understand that if we want to look at the Word of God, if we really have seriously looked at the Word of God and begin to understand some of the principles that even the carnal, physical human mind could understand. And I'll give you a biblical definition of the carnal mind in a little while. But if we want to look at those concepts that we could easily understand, if we just look at the Bible from a logical point of view, that the Bible itself teaches you have to be responsive to God for God to be responsive to you. I've heard the argument put forth by agnostics and atheists, well, God never did anything for me. Maybe they had a hard childhood, a hard life. God never did anything for me. I've heard people say that. Well, if you're alive, somebody did something for you. And people like that probably expect a little too much, but that laying aside, if you just look at the Bible does teach that God has to reveal Himself to human beings, that He has to reach out and make contact. He had contact. Adam and Eve had contact with God, but they rejected that. God threw them out of the garden and went away. And we see God doing that all down through the story of the Bible, that He would make contact with human beings and human beings would reject Him. In fact, He even came down to the earth as a human being and was rejected and murdered. Human beings like to think of themselves as being so super intelligent that they can figure out what is good and bad, what's right and wrong. Let's turn over to Jeremiah for a moment. I want to look at the human heart. Jeremiah, the 17th chapter, verse 9. Let's talk about the heart of man. The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? I, the Eternal, search the heart. I test the mind, even to give every man according to his ways and according to the fruits of his doing. You know, that tells us that, basically, putting in a little simpler language, whatever you sow is what you're going to reap. You know, a little aside, we don't stop and think about too often, because we see evil around us. We see people that call evil things good and call good things evil. We see that around us all the time. And sometimes it disheartens us. That's like I was talking about the person that would reject God because he says, God never did anything for me. And he looks at it from a very selfish viewpoint. We can look around us and we can see, probably most of us can remember back when we were in school. I remember when I was in school, and that's been a long time ago. That was been in the 50s, and it was, you know, a different age. I've heard it said that it was one of the best times to grow up in the United States of America that you possibly have in the world. In fact, I had a 50-year class reunion not too long ago, and that's what we were all saying, that, boy, it was mild then compared to what the kids have to deal with today. It was a good time to grow up. But as time has went on, we went through the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, and I'm talking about from an American perspective, and we saw all the things that go on, and as communication began to increase, and we had television, and we have the internet, and we're bombarded with all sorts of information. If some bad thing happens anywhere in the world, we know about it virtually instantly and have cameras on the scene. And we see evil people prospering. Like I said, when we were in school, is there any of you that ever saw somebody cheat in school? Did you ever see that? Did you ever see them make a better grade than you made? Or did you ever do it yourself and wind up with a better grade? And did some of them get caught? Rarely. They got away with it. Evil people in this world get away with evil, and they prosper. Don't let that bother you. In fact, that's what the Bible tells us. We can find it in the Proverbs. We can find it all sorts of places in the Bible. We find it in the New Testament. Don't let it bother you when evil people prosper. Maybe somebody tells a lie about you, and maybe everybody believes that lie. Maybe somebody ruins your reputation, and you really hurt and feel bad about that, because people can do that. People can, by their actions, can really hurt other people, hurt them bad. Proverbs basically says, don't worry about it. We find a lot of it in the Psalms, because David had to deal with a lot of these things, and God said, don't worry about it. I laugh, and I'm paraphrasing this in my own language. I laugh at the wicked people. I laugh at them because it's so futile what they're doing. And that's the way it is with human beings and their reasoning. Human beings' reasoning is so futile. It's going to come to naught. I want to give you a little example in just a moment. Let's turn over to the New Testament for a minute, to Romans, and look at another scripture. So if we can see why poor old Adam and Eve didn't stand a chance, because God created them with a weakness, a built-in weakness in human beings. And all of us need to realize that we have that weakness inherent in our minds, in our character. If we can just realize that we have this weakness, then it gives us a little bit of an advantage. You know, if you're looking at the great military battles that have been fought, and you can look at the strategy of generals and leaders of nations that they had, and they would always try to find where the enemy was weak, and then they would know where to attack. So if we know where we're weak, if we can understand where our greatest weakness is, then we know where to put up our defenses. We know how to at least work to overcome that weakness. Let's look in Romans, the 8th chapter, and down about verse 7. Because the human mind, or the carnal mind — I'm reading from the New King James, and it says carnal mind, or human, that's all carnal means — the carnal mind is enmity against God, and is not subject to the law of God, nor indeed can be. So those who are in the flesh cannot please God. Adam and Eve, as fleshly human beings, had it built in that they weren't going to please God. They have to have something else. And of course, we get off into the New Testament theology of salvation. We say the New Testament because that's basically the way the world around us understands it. We look at that, and we can understand what was missing in man, that man had to have the Holy Spirit. He had to have something that came from God. God had to reach out to man. Man cannot choose God. It's against his nature until God reaches out to him and gives him an opportunity. Now, I said in a few words there what really is fairly complicated concept, and yet it's pretty simple when it comes to reality. Christ told his disciples that when he gave them the Holy Spirit, he said it will lead you into all understanding. And so God has to reach out to human beings, and he hasn't reached out to everybody yet. And again, that's another subject, but the natural mind, the carnal mind, the way man is created, the way we're all born, is that we are at enmity with God. So if we can realize that in our thought process, just from a carnal point of view, we automatically have advantage. Because I want to look at the way the world looks at some things. Human beings are extremely selfish. Everything is about self, and that's every one of us. That is every one of us. We don't really care all that much about what happens to other people. We may say we do. We may get a little emotional when we hear of some bad thing happening. I'm not saying that we're hard-hearted, but we really are. I'm not saying that people are not benevolent and don't from time to time care, but what I'm saying is that when it comes down to our flesh, when it comes down to us, we're extremely selfish. We care what happens to us. In fact, I got something here that I took a Holocaust class. I think Jamie's probably had that class too a few years ago, and this is something. In fact, I've seen this in Reader's Digest and several things. What a person in Germany said about his thought process when the Nazis came into power and they were beginning to oppress people. And he wrote, I guess you'd call it a little poem, a little thing that explains his actions. And it was all based on self. And he says, when they locked up the communists, I remained silent. I was not a communist. When they locked up the social democrats, I remained silent. I was not a social democrat. When they came for the trade unionists, I did not speak out. I was not in a trade union. When they came for the Jews, I didn't speak up because I wasn't a Jew. When they came for me, there was no one left to speak out. You see, I think that is a perfect example of a raw human nature, as long as it don't affect me. I remember, I think Cindy and I have probably still got a VHS tape of it, of a play, and this was a television version. Two fellows played every part in that play. Tuna, Texas was the name of it, and they had radio station, and I'll never forget this little old, they were giving the news, and there had been some kind of great disaster, and he just briefly mentioned it, and he says, it's not tuna. Okay. It didn't hit us. Okay. And that's sort of the way we are as human beings. You know, I know that for myself. You know, we can have the weather really being bad, and tornadoes coming all around. Or we can have earthquakes. I know last several weeks there have been several earthquakes in southern Arkansas. And I remember exactly what I thought. Well, at least it's southern Arkansas. It's not tuna. You know, the tornadoes go through, and it's in Oklahoma, and it sort of goes north up through Missouri here, and down in Arkansas, it's not bad, or it would be reversed. You people in Missouri see it come down Arkansas, and it's not tuna. It's not us right now. We're okay. I'll go back to sleep. That's human nature. That's the way we are. That's the way we are as human beings. We're not all that concerned about other people. Now, if we get around somebody else, we may want to impress them, or we may get feelings. Or I'm not saying that when some kind of disaster happens that we're not, that people are totally hard-hearted. The American people are very... And people around the world, in a sense, people do help each other. And I don't misunderstand what I'm saying. But I am saying that as human beings, as an individual, we think about ourselves first, number one. Now, so with those things in mind, I've just tried to build a little foundation. I want to talk about how human beings reason with God, just like Adam and Eve sort of reasoned that with God about what he had told them that their way of life should have been, because that's all religion can possibly be. Religion's not an emotion. It can be an emotion, and it is with most people. Religion is a way of life, the way you live, what you do, whether you're a liar and a cheat, whether you try to palm evil off for good. And I just want to look at the commandments of God. You know, a lot of people talk about the Ten Commandments. People talk about them and want to put them up on the wall, and that's where they should be, but they really should be in our heart. And I want to just look at some of the commandments. There's not hardly anybody that will argue with you over the last six commandments. Everybody will say, you know, I sort of like them because I don't want anybody to steal from me. I don't want to be murdered. You know, people will go back and forth over capital punishment, and they'll sort of wink at the adultery commandment, and they really wink at the coveting commandment, the honor your father and mother. You know, that one's an easy one because most human beings really do honor their parents. They do, even if their parents are not necessarily good people. They still say they were my parents, and they have respect for them as parents. People are pretty good about that. So mankind doesn't have a big problem with the last six commandments. Not that they're not liars, cheats, and thieves, but the ones they have big problems was the same ones that Adam and Eve had a big problem with. Adam and Eve never had a problem with murder. They had a son that committed the first murder, but Adam and Eve never murdered anybody. They did disrespect their parents, if you want to say they disrespected God. But let's look at these four commandments, and let's look at a little human reasoning, just the way human beings would look at those commandments. Let's take the first one. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Well, human reasoning is that human beings never figure that there might be counterfeit gods. You know, the children of Israel, when they came out of Egypt and God delivered them and gave them these very commandments and said, thou shalt have no other gods before me. He had just brought them out of Egypt with all these miracles. He was up on the mountaintop and he thundered down those commandments with his own voice. What did they do? They immediately went out and had Aaron make them a golden calf and bowed down and worshiped. So it's easy to substitute something for God, because human beings, the way they reason around that is the way they reasoned around it then. They told Moses, God's too loud. He hurts our ears. Give us a man. You know, God thundered down the law and they said, we don't want to hear it from that big, powerful God being. He scares us. Just have him send a man. Well, God sent a lot of men. Like Christ said, all the way from righteous Abel to Zechariah. And they killed them all. He comes down himself as a man and gives them the same law. And they killed him. They murdered him. And they would do it today. They would murder Jesus Christ again today and do it in the name of Jesus Christ. Don't you think that human beings wouldn't? Because they would. And when he returns, they're going to try to again. Let's look at the graven image commandment. Thou shalt make no graven image, the likeness of anything in heaven or on earth. That's pretty conclusive, isn't it? And yet, I performed a funeral service a week or two ago, and I know out in the cemetery was a graveside service, and I nearly mentioned at the funeral service. I didn't, simply because I didn't have a lot of time to elaborate on it, but I did mention these first four commandments, and there was a statue of supposedly Jesus out there. God plainly says in these Ten Commandments that a lot of these so-called Christians want to post on the wall, "There shall make no graven image the likeness of anything in heaven or in earth." And of course, we know that nobody knows what Christ really looked like, no living human being today. But what is the human reasoning on that? Well, if I got a picture of Jesus on the wall, it makes me closer to God. Or if I've got this image out here, it somehow makes me feel more religious. And you know, I can't get inside of people's minds because I don't understand that thought process myself. I really don't understand that process, but people do. They will justify. They will justify what they do. That's human reasoning. They will justify what they do and try to make something that is evil, sin. Sin is the transgression of the law. If you break the first commandment, if you break the second one, you've transgressed the law. And they try to make it palatable. They water it down. Now, they say God just didn't understand that we really need these icons and these statues and these symbols. And yet you can find all sorts of, forgive the terminology, nice little old ladies that have got their pictures of Jesus all around the house, and they may have a good, nice little copy of the Ten Commandments up there too. And I'm not picking on little old ladies. I'm just using that as an example. Human reasoning. Human reasoning. How about the next commandment? Do not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain. And how does human reasoning come to that? Why, they look at it this way. Well, God didn't know I was going to get so mad, and I just need to curse. I got to have something to curse with. And when it comes to taking God's name in vain, you know, the people, I've got some friends that I can talk to, get along with anybody. I've got some friends and acquaintances that are atheists and agnostics. I understand them pretty well, a lot better than they understand me. And in every case, those people use God's name more than I do. Or you do. They can't open their mouth without taking God's name or Jesus Christ. They really love to take Jesus Christ's name in vain. So the people that reject the concept of God use His name more than anybody else. You just watch that and see. In fact, I told one of them one time, I'm a little careful about the way I use God's name. He didn't understand what I said. He didn't get it, even though he's a very intelligent person as far as the world is concerned. He was too dumb to understand what I was telling him. I'm careful about using the name of God because He doesn't like people to misuse His name. That's not exactly the way I worded what I said, but that's true. God doesn't like for His name to be misused. In fact, that's the other part of the commandment that I didn't quote. He says that people that take His name in vain will not be guiltless. He will hold it to them. He will remember it. Jesus Christ, His name has been used so much, so much. The next commandment, the fourth commandment. I did say this at the funeral because the person that I was conducting the funeral for was a commandment keeper. I said plainly that she understood the fourth commandment. I said I learned to count to seven before I ever went to school. Most kids do. My kids could count to 1,000 before they ever went to school. But people can't count seven. About the fourth commandment, people say it doesn't make any difference at all. God didn't know that I needed to work Saturday. God didn't know how it was going to be in this society today that we live in today. God just didn't understand. And what difference does it make anyway? Well, I tell you, now I'm self-employed and have been all my life. But I have to work by appointment. And if I've got an appointment that's going to be there a certain day at a certain time, and I'm not there, I don't get paid. I don't get paid. If you get you a new job, I challenge anybody out there, try this. Try it. Get you a job. They hire you. They tell you, you come in Monday morning at 8 o'clock. And you show up Tuesday morning at 8 o'clock. See how that goes over. God says, I want to see you every seventh day. I want you to rest, and I want you to acknowledge me every seventh day. You say, no, well, I want to do it tomorrow. See how well it works. See how well your human reasoning works. Because you see, what Adam and Eve did, then we're getting down to the point that I want to make. And it's a simple point. Human reasoning will automatically reject God. The carnal mind is enmity towards God, not subject to the law of God, neither can be. Often by itself, that human carnal mind will reject God. And in rejecting God, we reject God's religion, God's way of life. I'm repeating myself here because that's the point we've got to understand, that religion is not an emotion. It's not a group of friends. It's the way we live. And that's all God was telling Adam and Eve. You've got to live the way I tell you you have to live. I've given you this environment. We'll use that word instead of garden. People might understand that. I've given you this property. It's all yours. You can do with it. You can dress it and do with it as you please, except there's one place I don't want you to stray over here and do this particular thing. I don't want you to decide you can do something better than what I've got for you. You can't live. I don't want you to decide that you can make your own choice about your religion, your relationship with me. You cannot choose. You can either choose whether you will have a relationship with me or you can choose whether you won't. And so at that point in time, mankind started on the process of developing its own religions, its own way of life. Now, if you're not a student of history, I recommend you get out there and start studying some history and look at what's happened in this world. You can even look at what's happened in the United States of America and what's happening today. And we can look out at the world and we can see all sorts of religions. We can see all sorts of religion. And Jesus Christ said one simple thing, that dumb human beings are too dumb to see. Anybody listening to this online, I'm sorry. But if you follow the religions of the world, you're dumb. You're stupid. Here's what Christ said in Matthew, the 7th chapter, verse 13. Enter by the narrow gate, for wide is the gate, and broad is the way that leads to destruction, and there are many who go by it. Because narrow is the gate, and difficult is the way that leads to life, and there are few who find it. That's pretty simple terminology, isn't it? Pretty simple terminology. We just got back from the feast, and you know, from where we're at now, there's a couple of ways we could go out to where we kept the feast. We could go up here and get on the 4-lane highway and go pretty straight through it, and that's probably where we'd find the most traffic. That's where we would find more people. Or we could go down, and I've got a specific road in mind. You know, we could go down a little bit south and go up through the hills and the crooked roads. I've been up that way. And last time I went that way, I had a bad tire. Boy, it wasn't a fun trip. And the people take the easiest road. Now, you look at this with religion, and I know a person down where I live that goes to a big church, drives probably 50 some odd miles to church every week because it's a big church, got hundreds of people going. You know, I've had people come in this room to visit this congregation of the Church of God, and they see that it wasn't a tremendously large group, and they were disappointed because they would expect. And these were people that had been looking at the Bible and looking at the truth, and they would expect to find a massive crowd of people. Well, are you smart enough to look out and see where the big crowd is and to see where the little crowd is and to see that Christ said, the big crowd's not where it's at? Big crowd's not where I'm going to be, because he said the way that leads to life, his way, Jesus Christ's way, that there wouldn't be many people that find it. It would be the few. That's totally contrary to the way human beings think. Human beings are herd animals. And I don't mean that in a derogatory sense, but there is sense to it. God does call them sheep, and they go with the flock. Where everybody goes, that's where they want to go. God's looking for individualists, somebody that can stand on their own feet with his help and be obedient to him. People and individuals that don't give in to their carnal human nature, but people that are willing to have the same religion that God has. People that are willing to live the way God says to live. This has been James Throgmorton speaking to you for the Churches of God.